This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Well, folks, I'm not sure what that is, but that's a Michael Heck original, I'm told. And we bring Michael Heck with his musical prowess to the stage,
yeah.
President and CEO of GNO Inc. That CEO GNO Inc. thing is just a sidekick. I mean, that's just, you know, it's really more of a distraction.
I got to give credit. That was a Raj Smooth, the greatest DJ in the world, remix of We Built This City by Starship, combined with Big Frida, New Orleans Bounce, combined with Dr. John down in New Orleans. And I don't know. It worked. It worked at the event on Friday. I'm not really sure it's radio ready though. I'm sorry, Noel. I apologize to you and to all the listeners. They didn't sign up for this.
Well, you know, I'm just curious how much of this choreography is going to go on Friday night at the Roast. For you, for those of you that don't know, Michael Heck is the MC. Of the roast this Friday, where I'll be roasted by the Sheriff Joe LoPinto, Councilman J.P. Morrell, Diane Newman, my boss, Ronald Surpass, and Cynthia Lee Shang. It ought to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, it's a great cause. I'm Delgado, do or die. My wife used to teach there, doing such great work. But the nice thing about being the MC, you know, and filling in for the inimitable Eric Paulson, who's no longer with us, unfortunately, is that you get to, like, everybody who's there gets to just roast you. But as the MC, I think I get to roast everybody, right?
Right. And they get to do it right back. So my goal is to deflect as much as possible to you off of me. So it's going to be an interesting.
I'm here for you. They can't kill me. I'm already dead. So they should just, you know, go for it. I've taken so much friendly fire, you know, I don't need enemies.
It'll be a lot of fun for sure. Michael, yeah. The very successful luncheon put on by you guys, packed house. The buzz was absolutely incredible. It was so strong. A lot of smiling faces. Got a chance to see a lot of folks you don't see very often, but it's always good to see them at your event. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it was lovely. And first of all, thank you and WWL for broadcasting from out in the lobby for the entire time. That's really special for us to have you there. It adds to the event. It gives us incredible reach beyond the 1,200 people of the Hyatt. So thank you. But the event, you know, it's evolved over the years so that now it's part kind of corporate meeting, but it really has evolved into the first half is this networking event. It almost has like a Washington Mardi Gras vibe to it where you can just go and see everybody. And I think folks really enjoy doing that. And then it's become a state of the region where we can take stock about what we've done and where we need to go. And I think that in this day and age where every day you wake up and you roll over to look at what bad news or unbelievable event is on your phone, there's something that is very settling and encouraging to have an event where most of what we talk about is the good stuff that we've got done, and it's mostly true. And so people seem to enjoy it as, I hate to call it a cheerleading event because it's got more substance than that, but it is definitely a rally for the region.
Absolutely. Had a great conversation with the outgoing board chair, Christopher Kane. Just seems to be a really rock solid individual. And the incoming chair, Leah Brown of Chevron, she brings a lot of excitement as well to that endeavor. And she looks for another great year. Obviously, she'll be energy focused. She comes from the energy sector.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate with all my board chairs, but we got particularly lucky with this one, too, because Chris Kane might be the best pure economic development lawyer in the state. And so having him on board as we were navigating not just regular GNO Inc., but the Super Bowl was really important to make sure that we did things the right way. And he was incredibly generous with his time. And then Leah coming in right on the heels of the energy conference where we unveiled Louisiana Future Energy to the world. Is so perfect, it's like we planned it. I've worked with Leah forever for Chevron. Chevron's been one of our closest partners, and they're one of the leaders in oil and gas and also in alternative energies for the future. So she's exactly the right person for this moment. And I don't know if you agree with this, Newell, but I feel like there is a momentum has returned to the region that we haven't felt, I don't know, in about a decade, if we're being honest. It feels like we're firing on most of our cylinders again. The winds are coming in on a weekly basis. Crime is way, way down. The celebrations have been fabulous. So I don't think I'm just drinking my, I mean, I am drinking my own Kool-Aid, but I think that the way I'm feeling makes sense right now.
No, I mean, when you come off a fairly long period of time where you're stacking success on success on success, I mean, that just, it's a game changer, right? You create the momentum. People become believers. They become more cheerleaders than naysayers. It tends to be difficult at times. I mean, I think the other day we got kind of a little bit of a gut punch when they said we're $800 million in the hole in the road program, you know, and you know as well as I, all along we were told, we got the money. We got the money. Money's no problem. Yeah. It's no problem. You know, when you have that momentum, you can just kind of plow through that noise, right? And I'm sure at your next set of meetings, you guys are going to be talking about it.
It's great. So, you know, my brain only thinks in metaphors, but it's kind of like when you got the big 500 horsepower outboard on, you can blow through the water, and when you hit a white cap, you know, you just plow right through it. Like you said, it might shake you a little bit, but you keep going forward. But if you don't have that momentum and you're just in a rowboat, you know, when that big wave comes, you know, at best it's going to stop you, and at worst it might capsize you. So the momentum does matter. I think it is real. And again, it's whether you're looking at the economic development side where we just had this massive Hyundai announcement made, you know, out of the White House, or on the quality of life.
Let's talk about that. I mean, that sounds very real. I hope it's very real. I hope it doesn't get caught up in regulatory morass like a lot of other, because, you know, a steel facility of this size, I don't know that we've seen one like this in 3 to 4 decades in this country, much less in the state of Louisiana.
we haven't seen one this size in this country in a long time. We've never seen one like this in Louisiana. And the reason being that we missed the whole automotive revolution. So we didn't necessarily need one of these because we weren't building the cars made out of the steel. But Hyundai is coming here because it's the right location, the right package. But fundamentally, what changed here, it's not like the river is new. It's not like for the past decade we haven't had cheap natural gas or electricity or Donaldsonville suddenly sprung up. It's that we've got a White House, a governor, an economic development secretary who are just leaning forward really hard into rolling out the welcome mat to the world and saying, we want you to manufacture in the United States and in Louisiana. And people think that economic development sometimes is just transactional and mechanical, and it's about, you know, who has the right utilities or the right rail access or the right site. You need all that stuff to get to the table. It can eliminate you. But fundamentally, deals are closed in economic development, just like they are in the private sector, based on relationships and attitude and trust. And these guys and gals, Secretary Bourgeois, the governor, the folks in the White House, the president, are obviously doing a heck of a job with this because, you know, these announcements are real. It wasn't a hologram. I know the site. My family's from Donaldsonville, best city ever built on the wrong side of the river, I used to say. I think that this is potentially the beginning of the turnaround that Louisiana has been looking for about 40 years, since the oil bust of the 80s.
Yeah. And, you know, but the test truly is going to be, you know, how expeditiously, we can get this done, right? I mean, we got to prove ourselves in that respect. And we got to bring all that we can bring to bear on this, right?
Correct. And there are a number of things in all kind of in being realistic about it that can change. Geopolitics can change. Markets and macroeconomics can change. And then when you look at the project itself, the real measure of success for us is going to be not just the taxes that are paid over time, but mostly the jobs that are created. And when you look at the 1,500 jobs that are being projected, permanent jobs, good paying jobs, as well as the construction jobs, the question, Newell, is how many of those are going to really be people from Louisiana and not people with Texas mm-hmm. license plates? And that gets down to, you know, the River Parish Community Colleges of the world, the LSUs of the world, and also our support organizations, because all too often, and this is a real issue, we have these major facilities come and we just don't have enough people that have the right training. And frankly, tragically, can just do basic things like pass the drug test. We have mm-hmm. to address those things, because if we're not creating jobs for Louisianians, then the positive impact is going to be, you know, majorly incomplete. So it's good to celebrate, but you're totally right that the proving has only begun, and we're not going to know whether this thing has succeeded for another decade or more.
And you've said this many times, Michael, it's going to be these 2-year, for the most part, and 4-year colleges that need to align themselves with what these folks are actually going to need, right? And it's not start once they open, it starts in advance of them getting there. And that alignment, I think, oftentimes is where we fail. We're not creating that alignment enough. We're not focused on the alignment enough.
The LCTCS schools are incredibly important, but I would argue that it actually starts at high school or younger, and it's why you need career technical training programs. And it's not just about training kids, young people. It's about inspiring them. I think about, you know, our own son who got involved in FIRST Robotics in high school. And now he's trained to be a robotics engineer because he was inspired by that when he was in high school. And so the 2-year schools, the 4-year schools matter tremendously, but the inspiration as well as the training has to start in K-12. what people understand, what young kids understand, that these careers are for them, for people who come from backgrounds like them, and that it's plausible for them to get them and have great paying jobs where they're going to be able to support their families. So the onus is absolutely on us, you know, all the way down to kindergarten, frankly.
New Orleans Entrepreneur Week, we've talked about this a lot over the years, been very successful. They are. It's taken place this week here in the city of New Orleans. A great lineup, 100 speakers and panelists, all different areas. Tell us about it, Michael.
Yeah, I think what's exciting about this year is it's called Noe Goes Back to School. It's happening over at Loyola, which I love. I think Loyola is a fantastic school that has a great, diverse student body. It's got a very entrepreneurial school. I was actually talking last night to a woman who teaches at the business school there. And they're going to be having a summit that starts tomorrow. That includes keynote speakers, industry panels. They're going to have a citywide event now, Noe in Your Neighborhood, about innovation and culture. They're going to be talking about money at the Common House down in the Warehouse District on the 26th to 28th with the Venture Summit. And then kind of, I think, to me, what's become the keystone is the Idea Pitch Competition, which is March 28th at the university, and that's the Shark Tank event that they have. And then this abuts on the Book Festival, which begins, I think, this on the 28th. And this is the one that Walter Isaacson is so closely aligned with. And it's becoming a little bit of a, I don't know, of like an Aspen Ideas type of festival here at Tulane. So all this stuff, it creates excitement. It creates a culture that supports innovation. And I really do, it feels right for me for Noe to be doing this at Loyola. So I wish them a lot of luck with it.
No, absolutely. And we're going to have Cheryl Landrieu from the New Orleans Book Festival co-chair with us at noon talking about their event.
Oh,
March 27th through 29th. I looked through the lineup last night, the panel discussions. Wow. I mean, people from all over the United States, all walks of life. I was saying there was one of particular interest to me was going to be the bipartisan discussion on America's future, David Axelrod and Karl Rove. You know, ends of the spectrum.
Well, fascinating because, I mean, not only are they both esteemed, but what I found with Karl Rove particularly is that even though he comes from the Republican side explicitly, his insights are all there and they're for anybody to take. And you ignore Karl Rove at your own risk. I think it's basically Newell that everybody shows up because they want Walter to write his next book about them. So they're like, yeah.
There's a method to his madness.
Or Ben Franklin. Right, exactly. People only show up at our stuff if we give them free food. You know, it's just.
Exactly.
We have different currency, much
free
less
food, free tickets to something, whatever it may be.
Right.
A couple of souvenirs, novelty items. DJ El Camino posters, who knows?
Whatever, but it's not like having an epic biography written about you that's going to be New York Times number one bestseller for 2 years. Although I was laughing, I was talking to Walter about the Elon Musk biography, which must have been exhausting for him to write because he spent 2 years with Elon, which you can just imagine what that was like. And this was just when Elon was buying Twitter and everything completely changed, and Walter said, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to write about a living person again. It's too hard.
Well, I'm sure a lot has changed too, right? I mean, he seems to be one of the most controversial figures in the United States today. I never thought anyone would knock Donald Trump off that podium, but obviously someone did. But it'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We will be right back, and we promise not to play any more of his music. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. And Michael, we have a special guest.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're having our guest today, a great friend of mine, a great leader, the former chairman of the Port of New Orleans, Joe Toomey, and is here to discuss a report that he really spearheaded many months ago or had the idea for, which is important not just in its content, but in the fact that it's all five deep water ports all working together. So big congratulations to Joe Toomey.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember it was over a year ago when Michael told me it would be a major undertaking to get the five ports together, but a worthwhile undertaking. And I'm so excited that yesterday we were able to present at the Ports Association of Louisiana's annual conference our final report for a comprehensive commodities analysis that was done by a recognized national consultant. And we had all five ports come together to share in engaging the consultant and share in the cost of doing the study. So it was an exciting day for me yesterday to come to a conclusion for this this long work of getting together, which started just bringing the five ports together, get them around the same table, create a dialogue, and now to finalize the first of these efforts to work together. Hopefully it's a product that that our state can use going forward to help with the economic development and the growth of the ports, and in particular expand international trade in our region.
Obviously, Joe, the realization of the necessity for the collaboration had to have come about because of the competitive nature of what we're seeing with ports across the country, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it really goes back to 2023. There was a lot of legislative and business chatter about the ports not working together. And that resulted in legislation passed by both Senator Connick and Senator McMath dealing with the oversight of the ports. The first time in memory that legislation was passed directly dealing with the operation of the ports. So it showed an interest. And then from there, it was obvious to me that we had to get together and react to this legislative interest. And that's when I got the five ports together. But it's an interest that's now continued with additional legislation in 2024. And this current administration has really taken, for the first time in my memory, a serious interest in ports and a recognition of their importance and how it ties in to economic development in the state.
We just had the governor on in the 10 o'clock hour, and he talked about a lot of that. Obviously, each one of the ports have incredible strengths. They also have weaknesses. And if you can complement one another, you're stronger in its totality. But if you would, could you share with us maybe some of the findings that you found unusual, surprising, happy to hear about?
Well, let me say the report is not all roses. It points up some opportunities, some low-hanging fruit and some more challenging opportunities to bring international trade in and out of Louisiana. It also points out the challenges that we have, the distance up the river, the competition with Mobile and Houston. We don't have the population base Houston has. We don't have the draw that Mobile has with the automobile industry. So there's definite challenges as well. But there are some, if you go, it's a 200-page study that was done and really provides a path of where we can attract additional trade. I mean, there's some trade, for instance, that products that develop in Louisiana that travel by land to Charleston and Savannah to get on ships that go international at that point. There's no reason why those products shouldn't come through Louisiana ports. We need to do a better job of coordinating, and that's what I see being done by this current administration, the LED, and the new committee for Ports and Waterways Investment Commission. I think they're trying to utilize the assets that we have, put their money where they can get the most bang for it. And to do that, you got to really set what's the best priority for Louisiana as opposed to what's the best priority for each individual port.
It's tough out there, too. And Michael and I talk about this all the time, Joe, and I think you'll agree. Economic development is not an easy game. It's a very competitive game. And a lot of times we fail. And what I'm hearing from you, this exercise is really about looking at ourselves in the mirror critically, right? And gaining a better understanding of what opportunities we're missing and where we're able to leverage those opportunities. Because we have the template, we have the foundation, we have the infrastructure. It's now incumbent upon the five ports to maximize that and leverage it to the nth degree, because you just can't let these opportunities slip by, because you'll never be what you could be.
Right. We need to build on the assets and the strengths that we have. Every port can't be everything to everybody. And if you look at the five ports in particular in the lower Mississippi, they
go
really
ahead and
have
name them, Joe. Joe, would you name them? I'm getting a number of texts from people saying, what are the five ports?
You have the port of Greater Baton Rouge. You have the port of South Louisiana, the port of New Orleans, the port of St. Bernard, and the Plaquemine Parish port. Together, those five ports represent the busiest port complex in the world. That would be a great marketing tool to go out and get people's attention around the world, that this is the busiest port complex in the world. That hasn't been done because the ports have traditionally operated very much independent of one another. But that marketing aspect would be helpful. In addition, I think the state is really wants to focus on the ports, is prepared to put more money into the ports, but they want to know what the best priority is for the state, and they want to get the most bang for their buck.
Obviously, I have to imagine there was an economic impact statement or portion of that report. If X, then Y. If we did this, then what does that translate to? I have to imagine those numbers have to be pretty damn positive, right?
Well, the opportunities are there. Realistically, let's just take when they showed information on containers, for instance, 70% of cargo in the world is moved by containers now. There's been very little growth in New Orleans. Houston and Mobile, a lot of growth. So the study gets into, why not Louisiana? And how can it be Louisiana? So it gives you, It doesn't give you numbers on what it's going to be on the back end. It gives you a path to increase international trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that path, it one of the things involved is more money from the state for infrastructure. And that's what they did in Savannah and Charleston. The state and the ports and the highway system, they all came together in a comprehensive sense and made a commitment to an economic development projects at the ports. It takes a comprehensive effort, not just the ports, not just the state.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I guess that's where local government comes in. They got to be on the same page as well, right?
Yeah, and the local governments, the way we're set up in Louisiana, don't have they're involved, but they're not the big player like the port itself or the state. But yeah, if you can get everybody pulling together, the more you can get pulling together, the more you can expect on the back end.
Michael, yeah, observations.
I mean, the highway system, the rail system, it's all connected.
Michael, any observations? Yes.
Well, I just think what's groundbreaking about this, again, is not, I mean, the study is going to have 200 pages of good information, but the magic that Chairman Toomey has been able to pull off here is simply getting everybody to agree to support this one document. That might seem like a small thing. I would kind of go back to the moonshot and say this is one small step for getting information about how our ports can be maximized, one giant leap for coordinating the lower Mississippi so we can retake the title from places like Mobile. I think this is actually majorly significant, and we're going to be able to build on this to coordinate better on aligning our investment so that we can begin to build it back. And it's not, like you said before, Newell, everything layers on. So once we get the port built in St. Bernard, the Louisiana International Terminal, that's not going to be just good for St. Bernard. That's going to drive light manufacturing and distributing and warehousing in New Orleans East and in St. Tammany West. And then when you look at the way they've designated the corridor along I-12 in St. Tammany for this type of warehousing use, that's going to then tie in. The schools have programs. For example, there's a warehousing and logistics program at Southeastern University where people can train for these jobs. All of these things have to be working together in order to maximize the potential. The only way that you make the whole greater than the sum of the parts is through this depoliticized cooperation. And Joe Toomey has taken us, I think, a significant step in that direction.
And Michael, absolutely. I'll tell you, when you mentioned a term about built upon, now that we've completed the study, released the study, next week I have another meeting scheduled with the five ports. I'm bringing in Mark Hebert, who's the chairman of the Investment Commission, the State Investment Commission. I'm bringing in Julia Comier, who is the Intermodal Commissioner.
Sure.
So, and to get the five ports around the table again and say, okay, next step, you know, we're not finished and done. It's next step. Where do we go?
Yeah, Newell, I wonder, do they offer a Nobel Prize in port partnership, or am I making that up?
Well, you know, Joe, you had me when you said the five ports together make up the largest port complex in the world. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm saying, oh, my God, how many years has that been the case? And how many opportunities have we missed because we're not singing off that sheet of music?
But even if we are the largest, you shouldn't rest on your laurels.
That's an opportunity.
Build on what we have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I never imagined that we had that footprint in the lower Mississippi. I mean, I knew we had a large one. I knew it was very influential. It drives a lot of our economy, but I had no idea that it, you know, in totality, it's the largest port complex in the world.
And the reason being is you the five ports aren't doing the same thing. They all have a different business interest, whether it be petroleum or natural gas or cruise or containers. South Louisiana doing a lot of grain, a lot of bulk. So they're different. But when you bring them all together, it covers the whole terrain.
And let me add in a lanyap there because I can never leave well enough alone. We've also got Avondale that we have to bring back into commerce for some light manufacturing with that massive deep draft dock there. So you put this all together, it really could be into hum, but you know, we've been too busy fighting each other instead of fighting the competition, and that's for decades. And I think we might be changing that now, which is very encouraging.
No, we have to. We don't have a choice, quite frankly. We have a lot of troubling statistics driving, you know, permeating into our economy that we need to beat back on so many different fronts. Joe Toomey, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations to you and all of the directors of the five ports for coming together. We really appreciate them forward leaning on this issue, and hopefully you have continued success. We will be right back with Michael Heck and his final thoughts. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., and we're about to talk about why this city is so great. But I just want to remind folks, today, Wednesday at the Square, WWL and Odyssey New Orleans at the Young Leadership Councils, Wednesday at the Square. These are great times. Favorite local music, emerging artists. Today, Teapot and Speedy from our sister station, B97, they're going to be out there hosting folks. And Maggie Kerner with the Whisper Party, presented by Abita Brewing Company and the YLC Young Leadership Council. Michael, New Orleans is being ranked the fourth best city in the South by Southern Living Magazine. The accolades continue to stack up.
They do. And to me, this is kind of a double-edged thing, or I feel can feel two ways about it. One, that it's lovely that we're ranked in the top five, and they say nice things about us. They talk about our music, food, culture, and history, for a guaranteed good time. But when I look at that, I also like to think, well, why aren't we number one, and what do we have to do to be number one? And I think part of it has to do with some of the quality of life stuff that we've made great strides on. You know, one of the things we talked about at the annual meeting is that we are one of the leaders in the nation in pushing down violent crime. Our homicide rate's down 50% over 2 years ago. Our January is one of the safest in decades. But it's also about opportunity, because you need more than great festivals and good safety. You also need to have a place where your kids can have a job. And that was one of the most, I think, important moments of the meeting, was when Leah Brown talked about her only daughter, who is graduated and now working in Houston. And now we have to create more opportunity through things like Hyundai for their kids to come back. And then finally, I just think New Orleans, and we need leadership that not only is good at executing on a daily basis, but is good at describing the vision about where we're going. We want to make sure we don't trip on the cracks in the sidewalk, but we also want to make sure that sidewalk is going in a direction that's going to be good for us and our families. So number four is great, but I want to get to number one.
No, I agree. At least we're on the radar, right? So, I mean, that's always a positive, as opposed to not being on it. And we can get there with the right leadership. I mean, we're used to punching above our weight. But I'll say this, Michael. I really believe the continued commitment of the business community and enhanced commitment of the business community is going to be critical. Just my thoughts.
That is from your lips to the business community's ears. There is a community cannot survive and thrive over the long haul without an involved business community. And the reason is pretty basic, is that business leaders love their city, love their families, love their community, but they also love their businesses that are located there. So they are going to take a long-term view in terms of how to maximize the environment for their business to be there. And one of the things that's hurt second cities in this country is, since the 80s, because of deregulation and consolidation, a lot of places, including New Orleans, have lost a lot of their headquarters, banks, law firms, insurance companies. And what we've lost with that is not just those high-paying jobs, but also the philanthropy, and most importantly, those business leaders that are going to stand up after a disaster, or stand up when they see something happening in government that's not right, and say, we're going to make it right. So it's now that we have a business community that's not as deep as it was, let's say, back in the 80s, it's even more incumbent on each of us to pick an issue and to fight to make it right for the city and for the region. So, no, I think those are really important words. And what we've seen since Katrina, Newell, is that one group, one business, even one individual can actually make a major difference in the lives of people in the region and state. So it's up to all, you know, each of us is to pick that issue and prosecute it. Go for it.
Absolutely. As always, Michael, truly appreciate your time, your insight. I've been working on a lot of material on you for Friday night. I thank you for hosting that and emceeing it for us. And it's going to be a fun night. And I think part of it should be in memory of Eric Paulson, who emceed that event forever and a day, right?
Absolutely. It's an honor to do it for Delgado, but it's also really to come in after Eric is very humbling, very intimidating, really. And we intend to do him right by being as mean, nasty, and downright dog dirty as possible. For you, Eric. I know you're watching us.
All right, folks. We will be right back. Stay with us.